Yom Kippur coming up, which has many intense concepts associated with it. But before we have Yom Kippur, we have Erev Yom Kippur. So Erev Yom Kippur also has some important chiyuvim that are associated with it, and we should be aware. We know we have an obligation to seek mechila between now and then. That is a crucially important concept. That's one of the only things, really, that is ma'akev the whole season. That with all of the various mitzvos that we have during this time, there's so many different things we have to do, but it's only mechila that the Mishnah says, if we fail to fulfill that obligation of seeking forgiveness from those who we have offended, excuse me, then Yom Kippur is not effective at all. So that's certainly something we want to pay careful attention to. We also have on Erev Yom Kippur the vidui that is performed at that point, so that we are able to accomplish that going into Yom Kippur and have that addressed before Yom Kippur starts. And that also interacts with another obligation, and that is the mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. So I thought we'd just spend a few minutes talking about that very fascinating chiyuv. So this is something that the Gemara in Maseches Brachos on Daf Ches, the Gemara comments on the fact that there seems to be a date mistake, if that's what it looks like, in the Pasuk in Chumash, because we know that we observe Yom Kippur on the 10th, and it's pretty important for us to get that right. And yet, the Torah in Parshas Emor talks about Inui taking place on the 9th of Tishrei. So it's a question, well, how exactly do we understand that discrepancy? If Yom Kippur is on the 10th, so why should we talk about fasting on the 9th? And the truth is, the Gemara actually has two answers to this question in different places. And that's an interesting issue in and of itself, why there are different answers. In one place, the Gemara Rosh Hashanah and Daf Tes, the Gemara tells us that this is the source for the notion of Tosefes. So the idea that we don't just wait for Kedusha to start and to come up and grab us, but we embrace the Yontif earlier, and therefore we start in advance. So the concept of Tosefes, that's one interpretation the Gemara has for this pasuk. So when it talks about Inui on the 9th, it's because we borrow from the 9th, we take from the 9th and add it to the 10th. Mikan shemosifim michol ha-kodesh. And we assume la halacha that that's true about every Shabbos and Yantif, although the pasuk is focusing specifically on Yom Kippur. And there was the view of the Rambam that read the pasuk in the minimal sense and understood it just to be referring to a chiyuv of Tosefes on Yom Kippur and specifically about the fast. But we assume the halacha that we're talking about all Shabbos and Yantif, that there's a mitzvah of Tosefes. So that's one interpretation that the Gemara has about this idea of fasting on the 9th. But what we're going to talk about for a few minutes now is the other interpretation that the Gemara has in Brachos, that this tells us that there's an obligation to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. And that kol ochel b'shos v'tishra ma'ala olav ha'kasav ki'ilu v'sa'ane tisha v'asiri. Whoever eats and drinks on the 9th, so the Torah credits him as if he fasted on the 9th and the 10th. So that's a fascinating concept. And it appears from here that this is a din min haTorah, that this seems to be the interpretation the Gemara is giving to the pasuk. So apparently this is considered to be a din d'oraisa. It's a discussion of the Rishonim a little bit as to how we could have this one drasha accommodate two chidushim, and that's something to consider separately. But this seems to be the case, at least as far as this is concerned, that there's a chiyuv to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. And the Gemara in that context also teaches other halachos on the way to getting to there. So, for example, regarding the obligation of Shnei Mikra Ve'echa Targum, which is actually what the Gemara is talking about in that space, and Brachos on Daf Ches, another one of the very challenging obligations that we have, and now soon coming up, the renewal of that Tkufa, the cycle's about to start again. So the Gemara there has that discussion that there was somebody who wanted to do the whole year of Shnayim Ekrav Yechad Targum on Erev Yom Kippur. And he was told that that's a bad idea for two reasons. One is that it's supposed to be specifically Im HaTzibur. Shnayim Ekrav is supposed to parallel and track what the Tzibur is laning. And also that you're busy on Erev Yom Kippur, that you have an obligation to eat, and therefore this is a distraction from that, and that's its own problem. So in that context, the Gemara tells us about this mitzvah that we have to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. So there are a range of interpretations in the Rishonim already as to what exactly is the purpose of this mitzvah. If we assume that indeed this is such a din, so what exactly is the purpose of this mitzvah? So just off the top of your head, I didn't give you Makoros to look at, apologize for that. But so without having necessarily seen what there is to see about this, so what would you say is the basis for such a mitzvah? Why should the Torah give us an obligation to eat on Erev Yom Kippur? Jonathan?
I think I heard an idea once, because Yom Kippur is a Yantiv, but because we're fasting, there's no Sudas Yantiv, so therefore eating on Erev Yom Kippur is our Sudas Yantiv.
Okay, so that is an idea that you find in the Rishonim, right? There is such a possibility, and that's something we'll expand on, that perhaps there really should be a Suda on Yom Kippur. And that touches upon a broader issue, which we didn't get a chance to spend too much time on this season, but is an important concept, has to do with, we talked about it a little bit actually, in the context of Rosh Hashanah, so just to draw on that for a second, that there is a discussion as to what is the proper atmosphere and mood for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, even though one might argue Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur might be different, but they clearly also are linked in a lot of ways. So the question of, in the context of Rosh Hashanah, we spoke about this a little bit, is there an obligation to have a Suda on Rosh Hashanah, or is it possible that one could even fast on Rosh Hashanah? So we talked a little bit about what that question reflects, and as far as the concept of Simchas Yantif, is there an obligation of Simchas Yantif on Rosh Hashanah? So the truth is, as much as it may seem obvious, maybe not so obvious, that there's a parallel issue regarding Yom Kippur, and that Yom Kippur should also perhaps have a concept of Simcha, and that Simcha maybe should mandate a Suda. In fact, the Gemara in Bava Basra, Gemara tells us that Yom Kippur has an atmosphere of Simcha, at least as far as the general mentality of it, that Yom Kippur is one of the two happiest days of the year. And between the two, Yom Kippur is the one that's more obviously happy, according to the Gemara. That is Yom Slichu Mechila Kapara. It's the day that we get atonement. So for sure, Yom Kippur is a happy day. So if that's the case, so then perhaps there should be a Chiyuv Suda. So that sounds like a good idea. I think we should publicize this notion that we shall have a Suda on Yom Kippur. Except there is a huge technical issue, the whole little pesky problem of the Yisrkaris that comes along with eating on Yom Kippur. So there's a technical issue with trying to schedule our Suda on Yom Kippur itself, and therefore perhaps we should try to have the Suda at a time that's associated with Yom Kippur, but not actually on Yom Kippur. So perhaps that's the notion. Maybe eating and drinking on the 9th is really a statement about having a Suda, and therefore that's going to be the meal in honor of Yom Kippur without actually happening on Yom Kippur itself. Truth is, there's even support in the Rishonim for a mitzvah of eating on Motzai Yom Kippur also. There is a whole discussion. It's a little bit technical, but the Gemara has a statement that Ne'ila Potaris HaShomayrev. We don't actually do this in practice, but the Gemara has the statement that Ne'ilah could take the place of Ma'ariv, and the Rishonim try to figure out what that means, because if we're assuming that Tfilas Arvis is a Rishus, that we don't actually have an obligation to daven ma'ariv, so then what's the chiddush of saying ilah could replace it? And if we're saying that there is in practice an obligation to daven ma'ariv, we've taken it on as a chiyuv, as indeed seems to be the practice, so then why should we let ilah overtake it if there really is an obligation in practice? So some of the Rishonim have an approach that is kind of in between, that Ma'ariv is not fully obligatory like the other tefillos are, but it's not something that we would set aside unless there is some real mitzvah obligation. So there are those who suggest that Motzoi Yom Kippur also, to get to the meal at that point, is also got a mitzvah component to it. So maybe that's what the Gemara is getting at when it says that we could let Ne'ilah suffice for Ma'ariv. It's not that we would casually do away with Ma'ariv, but because there is this mitzvah waiting, so maybe that's what changes the dynamic a little bit. So there's even this possibility that there is a concept of a mitzvah associated with the Suda after Yom Kippur. But it's all the more so likely that on Erev Yom Kippur, where the Gemara is telling us that there is a obligation of eating, that maybe that is indeed a function of a mitzvah. Now, by the way, in terms of where you could find this view and other views, so just again, so I think you've encouraged before, but some places you can look. If you look at the Gemara on Daf Tes in Rosh Hashanah, so there are some Rishonim who discuss this issue, and the Rashi over there and the Ritva discusses that. So the Ritva over there quotes a few views as to what the purpose of this eating is, and that's one of them. Others will discuss as we go on. And also Rabbeinu Yonah in Shari Tshuva also goes through a number of possible explanations as to what the purpose of this eating is. Okay, so thank you, Jonathan. So that's one possibility. So why else might we have such a notion of an obligation to eat? Caleb?
Well, we're going to be fasting on Yom Kippur, so it only makes sense.
Okay, so follow that through, though. What do you mean? So you're right to suggest that it could link to the fast on Yom Kippur, but when you say it only makes sense, so what does that mean?
Well, this is the only fast d'oraita that we have, and it's our biggest fast of the year for sure, and most important. And so if Hashem's going to command us to fast, He's also going to command us to be well-prepared for that. He's not going to leave us hanging. He's not going to leave us, pun intended, empty.
Okay, so that is a view that you do find in Rishonim, that there is this association between the fast and what's happening on Erev Yom Kippur, that it is somehow a preparation for the fast. But it does require a little bit more explanation and a little bit more fleshing out. So the notion that you're saying it's so obvious, it makes sense. So maybe yes, maybe no. So is this an idea kind of like the Torah as a Jewish mother here saying you're going to be fasting, better to eat a little bit, don't be hungry? Is the Torah just kind of looking out for us there? It doesn't want us to suffer so much. Is that the idea? Is that kind of just trying to make sure that we shouldn't be too unhappy? The Ritva actually has a language which is interesting to ponder. The Ritva has it, Shlo Yavo Lidei Dechias Inui, that it shouldn't come to the situation where you have to break your fast, because if a person is very weak and at risk on Yom Kippur, so then he may end up having to eat. So presumably, if a person hasn't prepared enough by making sure that he is able to fast because he's fully nourished beforehand, so then he may get in a situation where he's not able to fast. So that phrasing is interesting. It's worth thinking about for a second, because it sounds like it's not necessarily that we're worried that you shouldn't be too miserable, but that we're worried about the mitzvah as a mitzvah of fasting, and it's your responsibility to protect that mitzvah, to make sure that you're not threatening it by not being prepared. So that's something that's interesting to think about. In fact, it was a very interesting discussion in Poskim, that now we're past this issue, but there's an issue a number of postmen spoke about. Let's say you were to go to your doctor for your checkup before Rosh Hashanah, and you say you want to know about whether you're healthy enough to fast and the like, and the doctor, he knows a little bit about Judaism, but not that much. So he says, yeah, you want to know if you can fast on Yom Kippur. I think you're healthy enough to fast. You can handle a fast once in a while. You wouldn't be able to fast twice in a week, but you can handle Yom Kippur. So the doctor is not aware that there's some Gedalia that comes before. So what would you say about that? So if the reality is that by fasting on some Gedalia, you're not going to be able to fast on Yom Kippur. Doing so will make you too vulnerable so that you won't be able to make it through the fast. So what do you do about that? Do you fast on some Gedalia or do you skip it? What do you think about that?
Skip it.
Okay, so I got one vote for skip it.
Yeah, isn't
sorry, Shmuel, you were saying?
No, just maybe you don't skip it because right now you're chayav to fast and the fast is right in front of you.
Okay, so we got two sides. We have a third vote to decide between the two. Whose hands up, Zavi? Is that you?
I mean, we know a lot about Yom Kippur and how important it is, important of a day it is, and we know that it's one of the more required fasts. Meaning, we don't have that many required fasts, but that is more one of the more required ones. So it makes sense that you should skip Tzom Gedalia to fast Yom Kippur.
Okay, so. Shmuel, your hands up again. So I assume it gets a little harder to keep track of where to be at. Shmuel?
There's maybe, like, while that's true, like, we live in, like, the moment, like, halakhically right now, or whatever the reality is right now, maybe, like, it's true that Yom Kippur, it's more important, like, objectively to fast than Tzom Gedalia, but it's not Yom Kippur today.
I don't disagree with that comment. I just think that, meaning, how many fasts are told when we look at all the halachos for it, that like pregnant women should be fasting or eating as little as possible. Like, we don't hear that by Tzom Gedalia. We hear that a lot more by Yom Kippur and those intricacies more by Yom Kippur.
Okay, so Shmuel and Zavi are basically elucidating the two stadim of this issue, which we'll see a little bit more about in a second. Natanael, you have a hand up?
Don't we have the same discussion where if someone's, like, in prison and then we tell him, and he can get out one day a year to go daven, we tell him that he should get out today because there's no guarantee that anything will happen in the future for Yom Kippur?
Okay, so you're right. There is a machlokes about that, which I'll mention in a second. And that seems to graph onto this issue. We have to see whether there are other considerations that affect it. But theoretically, there certainly seems to be a similarity between that question and this question, and certainly are invoked together. Caleb?
Well, if we look at where the fasts actually come from, there's in Perek Ches of Zechariah talked when we returned from Babel, and Zechariah is asked if we should still be fasting the fast for destruction. He, in part of his discussion about it, he says, why are you fasting? These fasts are customs that you establish. And yes, while the fasts today aren't customary anymore, he talks about them as customs and says that cut the fasting, do tzedek u'mishpat, and get to the heart of what the fast is about. And so if someone can't fast on, if the choice is between Tzom Gedalia and Tzom HaKippurim, you know, I think that one should, that this would seem to favor Tzom HaKippurim more, and that one should do other things to be aware that it is Tzom Gedalia and to really get to the heart of Tzom Gedalia, but that fasting is not the most essential part of the Tzom. And so if you have to...
Okay, so let's kind of try to recap all the things that have been said in the past few minutes, which all of them have elements of truth here, or have more than elements of truth, and they're all relevant. So essentially, there is a machlokas about this question. Should one say, listen, Yom Kippur is clearly, no one's going to argue with that, like Zandu was saying, there's no question that between Yom Kippur and Tzom Gedalia, so Yom Kippur is in a whole different league. Like that, nobody would argue with. Nobody would argue with the question between the two, what is the more significant obligation? So it's clear that Yom Kippur is way in a different category than Tzom Gedalia. So it would seem like, on the surface, if you have to choose between the two, that Yom Kippur should be the clear winner. However, the point that Shmuel's making is true as well, that we sometimes maybe should have the attitude that we take our obligations one at a time. And if there's a mitzvah in front of me right now, even if that mitzvah is less commanding than whatever mitzvah we have down the pike, but this mitzvah is in front of us right now, and on the surface there's nothing stopping us from performing the mitzvah in of itself. Today I'm healthy enough to fast on some Gedalia. What's going to happen next week is not in front of me right now. So then maybe that's my obligation to follow that mitzvah as it is. And it's interesting, so as Natanael correctly points out, there was a major discussion with the Shuvas Rabbaz and the Chachin Tzvi and the Mishnah Melech and many others about the question of somebody is given an opportunity to perform a mitzvah. Let's say he's in jail or he's in the army and he can't perform mitzvahs where he is. And he's given a furlough and he's given an opportunity that he can perform one mitzvah or take off one day and perform mitzvahs that day. So should he save it up and wait to get the biggest bang for his buck and be able to do the most significant mitzvahs on that day and wait till such a time, Yom Kippur, whatever it is? Or should he take the first opportunity, even if it's some random Tuesday with no Kriyas HaTorah and not even a long Shir Shal Yom? But just that's what's first, and do whatever is in front of him at the earliest opportunity. We say mitzvah habali adach al tachmitzena, or in ma'avir in al ha-mitzvah, so don't pass up mitzvah opportunities. So that in general is a machlokes, and it would sound like it's relevant here, but you could even say even more. You could say it's not just a question of taking opportunities, that here you have a chiv to fast and so gedalia, and that's what's in front of you, and we don't necessarily say, okay, well, let me think, maybe I should save it up for something bigger. And there is precedent for this, because essentially, if somebody were to be sick on Yom Kippur, so we know that that person is not supposed to fast, and that person is not held responsible for the fact that he can't fast, because he's an onus, because he's being prevented by circumstance from fasting. So the Gemara Maseches Ksubis, for those learning Daf Yomi, this goes back to the beginning of the Masechta, but the Gemara in the beginning of Ksubas discusses that there is such a concept called Anas B'Tekhanas Chachamim, that sometimes a person is given a status of Anas, he doesn't have any control over the situation, even though what put him in that position is a Tekhanas Chachamim, a Din D'Rabbanan that restricted his options, but because of that, it's legitimately called an Onas. So maybe that's true here also. So the rabbi said, as Caleb was alluding to, there's a whole history here about whether this is a minig, or nowadays whether it's voluntary, or it's a din d'rabbanan. So if we assume there's a din d'rabbanan essentially to fast, so then the fact that that's going to make him unable to fast in Yom Kippur, maybe we don't make calculations and say, well, that's clearly the bigger mitzvah, so let's save up for that. But maybe when it comes time to consider Yom Kippur, so the status is honest b'tachos v'chavim, that he is held back and limited in his options because of the obligation of the rabbis in this case. So all of that is a fascinating question, but some Gedalia has already been, so why am I talking about this now? Because it highlights the fact that theoretically one does have a responsibility not to be in a position where he's unable to fast if he can do anything to affect it. So presumably if somebody decides that on Erev Yom Kippur he's going to run the Ironman event and he's not going to stop until right after Yom Kippur starts, then he's going to say, well, now I have to eat, I'm exhausted, I'm completely depleted, and I need to have something, I won't be able to fast. So we'll say, well, that was a bad choice to decide to engage in such intense physical activity before Yom Kippur so that you're unable not to eat, so that you're unable to fast. That was a dereliction of responsibility, that you should preserve your ability. So that's itself a whole discussion. So maybe it's possible to say that's what's going on here, that the Torah essentially is saying that you have to fast on Yom Kippur, and you also have to be very wary of making sure that you can preserve your ability to do so. That's a part of the responsibility of the mitzvah. So therefore, you also should take the steps before the fast to make sure that you're not likely, if you can control it, if you have the ability to influence the situation, that you're not likely to have to break your fast because you didn't adequately prepare from beforehand. So that would be perhaps what the Ritva is getting at, this extra point of not just that it's somehow connected to the fast, but that it shouldn't come to a situation where you're going to say, oops, I can't fast now because I forgot to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. So you shouldn't be in such a position, and you should make sure to take care of it in advance. It's interesting to think also, I think we've probably mentioned a little bit this year, that there is a whole concept that Rav Yosef Engel made well known, that he popularized in his Sefer, of dinim d'oraisa that serve as a safeguard for other dinim d'oraisa. That normally we assume a din d'rabanan is primarily there to protect the Torah, but you ever find dinim in the Torah itself that are there to protect other dinim in the Torah, what you would call a siyag mid'oraisa. So it's interesting to think he doesn't have this on his list, but maybe this should be added to the list. That here, normally a siyag d'oraisa is usually a prohibition. It's usually, a prohibition to own chametz on Pesach because that could come to having you eat chametz on Pesach. So you have one Torah prohibition that's really there to prevent you from violating another Torah prohibition. But maybe this is also an example that even though it's not a prohibition, it's an action, it's a positive act, but maybe that's the idea. The Torah commands you to eat on Erev Yom Kippur in order to protect your ability to fast on Yom Kippur itself. Now, it's also interesting because there seems to be some relationship between eating on Erev Yom Kippur and Tosefes Yom Kippur. They're both derived from the same pasuk. And that's a fascinating idea in and of itself. And there, Rav Yosef Engel actually does have on his list the idea of Tosefes Yom Kippur, Tosefes Shabbos, the notion of starting Shabbos and Yom Tov early, because he is talking there about a medrash that suggests that the reason we start Yom Tov early is so that we shouldn't come to be Mechal Yom Tov, that we shouldn't come up so close to the line that we don't notice exactly when Shabbos Yom Tov starts, and we end up doing malacha on those days. So therefore, we're supposed to create a buffer zone and to add on and to start early in order to prevent that from happening. So that application of the pasuk, it does seem to be that that's a protection of other Torah law. So it would be interesting if the other din here that's derived from the pasuk has a similar function also. Maybe it's also there to protect Torah law. Okay, so far so good. Everybody with me? So that's an interesting possibility.
So far, so good.
So far, so good. So it could be that that is the idea, that it's there to help us for the fast. And there are a lot of different twists on this idea of how exactly it helps us to do that. But this is one more intense possibility, that maybe it's specifically a part of our responsibility, that some understand in a more general way that this is a Kadosh Baruch Hu indeed acting like a Jewish mother and saying, shouldn't be so hungry, make sure to eat so you shouldn't be so uncomfortable. But it could be even more than that, that maybe it's a part of halachic responsibility, that you shouldn't come to end up canceling the fast. Now, there is a minority view within this camp, right? So well, we've seen now kind of two camps, that we started with the Simchas Yotiv camp. That's one kind of idea. And now we're talking about the preparing for the fast camp. So in this perspective, there is a minority view that maybe it's preparing for the fast in an opposite way. So that's expressed by the Torah Tamima and maybe a few others. The Torah Tamima points to a Gemara in Maseches Tainis that seems to suggest that to go from feasting to fasting is harder than just stam fasting. That if you've eaten in a more elaborate way on a day before a fast, to go from that to the fast is going to make the fast more difficult. So along those lines, he suggests that maybe, yes, the idea of eating an Erev Yom Kippur is in order to connect to the fast somehow, but maybe the opposite way we would think, that it's there in order to make the fast harder. And that's what the Gemara is getting at when it says, "Kala ochel b'shosa b'tisha ma'alal b'kosev ki'ilu husana tisha v'asiri," that by fasting on the, by eating on the ninth day, it's as if you fasted both days. And that itself is a little bit of a mysterious comment, which we haven't really explored yet. Is the implication that there's some value to fasting both days? Is that really what the idea is? So we need to find some way to do that, as if we should be credited as if we did. The Beis Yosef raises the stuff like, what if somebody literally fasts for 2 days? So then, should we say that he's not credited with fasting both days? The only way to get credited with fasting both days is if you eat the first of the 2 days. So that's an interesting concept to explore in and of itself. Jonathan, you have a question?
Yeah, I just am a little confused understanding how eating one day and not eating the other day is harder than stop going around your normal days and fasting the second day. It just feels like eating as a preparation would help. I don't get how it could do the opposite.
So it's certainly the more intuitive possibility that it helps. But you know, the question is, just physiologically, perhaps to get used to a certain level and then the shift is too jarring, as opposed to a more gradual reduction, that maybe might be easier to relate to. So when you're coming right from a more intense indulging in eating, and then you go straight from there to absolute nothing. So there could be a case physiologically to be made, but also there's an implication like that in the Gemara in Tanya is talking about the Mishmaros that sounds like that's a possibility. So certainly the less intuitive possibility, so I don't think any of us are thinking like that necessarily. Okay, we should make sure not to eat too much on the day before a fast, so that's going to somehow keep the fast from being too intense. I don't think we think like that. But there is some support, both medically and Talmudically, for such an approach. And it seems to tap into a certain perspective of this idea that you're credited as if you're fasting 2 days. It's a good question why that's a goal. We don't necessarily know. We don't apply Sveika de Yoma to Yom Kippur, although that itself is a question, because logically you would think we should apply Sveika de Yoma to Yom Kippur, because if we're applying it to Sukkot, Sukkot is after Yom Kippur. So if we're still concerned historically by Sukkot's time what in the day is, so then we certainly should still be concerned earlier on the 10th of Tishrei. So the idea there's no Sveika de Yoma by Yom Kippur is an interesting one. The truth is Yerushalmi already addresses that and suggests that there is a pikuach nefesh issue involved, that if you're going to fast for 2 days straight, so that's going to create already a significant strain that we have to worry about the health implications as far as that's concerned. So in practice, we don't have a concept of Sveika de Yoma regarding Yom Kippur. Now, actually, in practice, the truth is there were those about 75 years ago who did practice 48-hour Yom Kippurs, that during World War II and during the Holocaust, when there were members of the Mir Yeshiva and other Jewish people who were trapped in Shanghai and in Japan during those years. So there's a big question specifically regarding Japan as to how to calculate the dates, and the whole fascinating issue of the halachic dateline, where exactly the date shifts. So there was a big suffix regarding Japan when Yom Kippur should be observed. There was a machlokus between the Chazon Ish and Yubachil Michal Tukachinsky and others about how exactly to figure out the date of Yom Kippur over there. And there were those who were machmir to actually fast 48 hours because of that suffix. So it's not completely out of the realm of discussion, but in practice, we don't apply Sveika de Yoma to Yom Kippur. And why there should be a value to a 2-day fast isn't immediately obvious, but this is what the Torah Tanina suggests, that maybe it's a preparation for the fast in a negative sense, that it's a way of making it more intense, and that's why the Gemara has the statement of Kala Ochel B'Shosa B'Tisha. So just to keep those in mind now for a moment, if we break it down into these two camps, that it's either to prepare for the fast or independent concept of an expression of Simchas Yontif, and recognizing there's all kinds of subdivisions, especially within the idea of preparing for the fast. We have the positive version and the negative version, and there are probably a few other subdivisions within that, and there also are a few other approaches to the whole question in general of eating an Erev Yom Kippur. But if we try to narrow it down just to those two camps, that it's either about preparing for the fast or it's about having a Sudas Yontif, so what possible nafkaminas would there be? How would that affect the halacha? Or would it affect the halacha? How would that impact on how we carry out and how we apply the notion of eating an Erev Yom Kippur? Natal?
It could have a very practical application of what do we have to eat.
Okay.
Does there have to be a Suda element of washing and Basar V'yayin potentially, or is it just about eating something that will potentially help me fast, that has like long-lasting carbs that will break down slowly that I'll be able to fix?
Okay, so that point is very well taken. Indeed, there is quite a literature about this, as to the Gemara doesn't talk about what the eating and drinking involves, except to say that it's so time-consuming that it gets in the way of your Shnayim Mikra plan. But other than that, the Gemara doesn't give us too much information. In the latest forum, there is quite a discussion, and Natanael's correct that this certainly on the surface should be one major nafkamina. So what kind of eating are we talking about? Are we talking about eating that's focused on keeping you satisfied for as long as possible, and whether that has to do with certain kind of carbs or whatever the state of the science is at any given time? But whatever it is, maybe that's the goal, to try to focus on that which will carry you over into the next day. Or is the idea that it's supposed to be a suda, like a din suda? So whether that involves bread, whether it involves meat and wine, the various iterations in halacha, we find suda sometimes defined a little differently from other circumstances. So that's all a part of the discussion, but maybe there is some suda-like demand that is the case here, and therefore we should try specifically not just to eat something that's nourishing and that will tide us over, but something that Omer knows probably, what do they say in England before the fast day? Expression is well over the fast, no? So what will take us well over the fast? So what is it that will keep us satisfied enough, keep us able to function throughout the course of the fast? Is that the goal, or is it something else? Is it to have a suda with whatever we associate with a suda, bread, possibly yayin, various discussions as far as that's concerned? Of course, it's very possible that it could be both. Maybe we should be machmir for both. Maybe we should try to have a suda in order to fulfill that idea, and also try to keep in mind whatever it is that will tide us over the best. What other possible nafkaminas could you think of? Think of any other questions? So there are a number, and it's definitely what to explore. Just briefly, in just of time, just mention, okay, so Ezra put here, when does the chiyuv start? So do you want to expand on that? You have to unmute there. Night before or morning. Okay, no unmuting, so we'll keep on the chat. So now here, I really put you on the spot. So you're right, that is certainly a question that the Achronim deal with, as to when exactly is the Chiyuv first in effect. Okay, so I see, so have to keep this on mute. But question of what Ezra said, conveying to us here, is there may be a nafkamina as to whether this obligation starts the night before or just the day before. So here's the trick. So can you explain that connection? Can anyone follow through on how it is that the question, which certainly is an issue the post can talk about, is there a mitzvah essentially the previous night? So how exactly does one lead to the other? Caleb?
Well, if the mitzvah is Seudat Yom Tov, then we would only have a mitzvah to have a Seuda and to eat on the day of Yom Kippur, preferably close to when Yom Kippur starts. However, if there's a mitzvah of achila on Yom Kippur, then, or also, in a sense, if there's a mitzvah of preparation for the tzom on Yom Kippur, on Erev Yom Kippur, then we would also be trying to do that mainly during the day. What you eat on Monday night isn't necessarily going to carry through to Wednesday morning. However, if there's another din involved in that, in the mitzvah of achila, or if it's just a sam mitzvah achila, that isn't based on a tam, then the mitzvah would begin on Monday night.
Okay, Natalia, you want to add to that?
Yeah, what about if there's a, you know, if we're trying to do Sudas Yom Tov, do we have to have more than one? Do I have to have a night meal and a day meal, for example?
All right, that's actually opening up a very interesting question, because that probably, just to talk just in terms of Svara, so it's hard to say that it's going to carry over that far. It's to say that there should be some Suda that should acknowledge Yom Kippur is an idea, again, that Rishonim talk about, and certainly makes sense. But once we're detaching it from the day itself, meaning that it's not happening on the day, so then to also say that the concept of a night meal and a day meal that we would have on Yom Tov itself should also somehow be able to carry over outside of the day sounds harder, just speaking from a Svara perspective. So it's an interesting idea to consider, but it sounds like, okay, I can hear that having a meal adjacent to Yom Kippur could count as a Suda in honor of Yom Kippur, and we have precedent for that in Halacha, the whole idea that a Suda doesn't necessarily have to be happening at the exact moment in order to be associated with it. We find that could bring rayas if that's true in the context of weddings and brises and other things as well, that a Suda does not necessarily always have to be happening at the exact same time as the event in order to be identifiable as in honor of that event. But the whole question of carrying over all of the daily obligations to a different day, that seems a little bit trickier. Tano?
Could that get back to what we said then about having the potential fear of eating on Motsai Yom Kippur? Could that be...
So I was thinking that a little bit, you know, again, you have to put a lot together in order to get that and then to scatter it in both directions. It takes a little creativity, but it's something to think about. It's an interesting thought. So... here, I mentioned before about putting it on the spot, a little bit of a trap, and we're seeing here in the chat, it's coming fast and furious, too hard to relate to everything here. But Ezra mentions here that he was thinking the opposite. So the truth is, I think, and Caleb's responding to that, so I think that that is a little bit of the difficulty here sometimes in our effort to try to find nafkaminas and to associated with chakiras. So sometimes the connections are stronger and sometimes they're weaker. So here is one case where, as you've seen playing out in real time here, that you see svaras that really could cut both ways. So there is, to say what we know, there is a discussion whether the schiyav applies on the nighttime before Yom Kippur. And it does sound like it's possible to associate that with this question. But you see also the associations could go in either direction. And it's a matter of intellectual honesty. It shouldn't be too tied down to trying to make the chakira work as far as how the answer plays out. So it does seem, on the one hand, that if it's about wanting to be nourished for the suda, from the suda for Yom Kippur, then presumably it's more helpful when it's closer to the day of the fast. And the farther away you get from that, probably a little bit less helpful, but that's somewhat of a subjective assessment, while also if the idea is to have a meal that honors Yom Kippur, so then there's also probably a good logic to say that the more adjacent to Yom Kippur it is, the more associated it is with Yom Kippur, but maybe there's more flexibility there. So this is an example of a nafkamina that's a little tenuous, and we should probably acknowledge that. But just to suggest a few other possible nafkaminas that may relate to each other, and then we'll end in a few minutes. But there was a fascinating tshuva of Rabbi Akiva Eiger that was taken up by later postgame as well, but Shabiki Baker made this issue well known. And apparently he was asked by a woman who was not planning on fasting on Yom Kippur for medical reasons. And she asked, given that she's not going to be fasting on Yom Kippur, is she obligated in the mitzvah of eating on Erev Yom Kippur? Now, parenthetically, I never fully understood what kind of medical condition it is that requires you to eat on the 10th of Tishrei, but not to eat on the 9th of Tishrei. It would seem to be that once you're not fasting, then you don't really have the question of whether you should be obligated to eat. Although, if we're assuming that the Suda is a more elaborate, formal kind of thing with requirements, so that maybe the question is easier to understand, that maybe an individual is eating, not fasting, but not eating too much, and then the question is, okay, is it possible to say that it's hard to fast, but it's also hard to have a full Suda on Erev Yom Kippur? That's the nature of the question. But without figuring that out, essentially that was the question. So assuming she's not fasting on Yom Kippur itself, so does she have an obligation to eat on Erev Yom Kippur? Natana, you have a hand up?
But the Gemara says, but also the Shos Erev Yom Kippur, Kiyolo Asana, Tishri Basiri, doesn't also say anything about them fasting on Yom Kippur proper.
Right, so it doesn't make that link explicitly. So you're saying in order to get credit for both days, all you have to do is eat on the 9th. Doesn't necessarily say you have to fast on the 10th.
Potentially in the case of this specific child, yeah.
Could be. It's interesting. Although it's understandable, the presumption one might have that there is a link between the two. So this was the question that was asked to Vicky Vager. And again, later, Postkin also talked about some length. So what would you say, what would you think his answer was? Let's see who can guess what his answer was. Does she have to or does she not have to? Caleb?
I actually heard this tshuva. One of my rabbanim from my shul taught it to me that, yes, she should eat, she does have to eat on Erev Yom Kippur.
Interesting. You said that name, Rabbi Kiva Eger?
I think so, if I'm remembering correctly.
Okay, I think about a third of Kivager came out the different way. And just to explain why, that essentially, so you would think, like with everything, so it's a machlokas, so it's complicated, you can go through the studim, but the short answer would be no, she's not obligated. Why does that cover everything? Because Kivager said that essentially it's a mimanovshach, that either way you look at it, it's going to come out to no. Because if you assume that it's connected to the fast, so then it seems fair to say that if she's not fasting, so then maybe she doesn't have the obligation of Erev Yom Kippur eating. Well, what if it's not about that? What if it's separate from the fast? If it's just a Sudas Yontif that's taking place in advance of Yom Kippur? So to that he said, what would we term that? A separate mitzvah that applies positively on Erev Yom Kippur, what might you call that? A mitzvah saseh shazman grama. So therefore, maybe women should be pater for that reason. So the basic approach would be mimanavshach, that if it's to prepare for the Suda, so she would be exempt because she's not planning, she's prepared for the fast, be exempt because she's not planning on fasting. If she was looking at it as an independent chiyuv, so that maybe she put it for that reason, because of mitzvah seisha on gramis. You have to think like Sherlock Holmes, you have to look for the seemingly extraneous information in the case, that there was a reason why the case was described specifically as a woman asking this question, because that allowed for that whole mimanavshach approach. So, Jonathan, yes?
Then, if it's a man, we still say that you wouldn't need to eat an Erev Yom Kippur because say that maybe to have the Suda on Yom Kippur itself, or we can go back to Zombie's point and say, we try to eat you in minimal amounts because we don't want you to eat or eat as little as you can that you medically necessary need. Meaning, can we say that even regardless of gender, there might still be no Kiyuv on Yom Kippur?
So that gets into an interesting question. So it was simpler when we just phrased it this way because it allowed for that mimanavshach. But it's also interesting putting together a little bit what we said. So let's say it was a man who's not planning on fasting. So then you might say, okay, so then he doesn't have that sad to it. He doesn't have that sad that he's doing it to prepare for the fast. But he should do it anyway because of the Simchas Yontif idea. But then the Simchas Yontif idea is also what prompted the possibility that maybe it should be a more elaborate kind of meal. And then if the question is maybe the individual has the ability, his ability is limited, maybe you can't have a whole Suda, so should that shift the focus? So it becomes a little bit more of a complex question. If you want to follow it through and say it's about Simchas Yontif, maybe Simchas Yontif puts a little bit more formality in the obligation, which is an interesting thing to consider. So, like, so you have Netanel and Caleb?
If it's connected, whichever way we want to connect it to the fast of Yom Kippur itself, if it's connected to the fast, then why is it not the same thing as like by Shabbos, where the same way that everyone that you're chayav in the losis and you're also going to be chayav in the assay. So even though it's mitzvah assay shas man grama, it should be a similar idea to a woman being chayav in the assays of Shabbos as well.
No, I think you're right. That's the assumption. That's the obvious point. That he was assuming that if it's connected to the fast, then whoever is fasting has this obligation. But the reason she would be off the hook from that side is because she's not fasting. So if you, the assumption indeed is that whoever is fasting should have this, but if you're not fasting, maybe you should be off the hook. So that's not in that direction. But then the idea of mitzvah seh shazman grama was only according to the tzad that it's not connected to the fast, that it's a chiyuv suda in celebration of Yom Kippur, and maybe that should be treated as a mitzvah seh shazman grama. Caleb, oh, that was your question, but yeah,
that was my question. But about the suda, are women obligated in the sudot of Yom Tov and Shabbat anyway?
So yes and no. That's also a little bit of a complicated question. That happens to be discussed in another tshuva of Rabbi Akiva Eiger. So if you look in the very first tshuva of Rabbi Akiva Eiger, so he discusses a machlokas about this point, because also there are issues of mitzvah seisha as man grama there, except that there are a few very glaring exceptions, among them Shabbos, because the Gemara has a derivation for the obligation of Shal Shudis, where the Rishonim discuss Ran and Ben Etam. They come for different reasons, but they essentially agree that women are Chayavos and Suda Shabbos, and Yontif may be more of a question, except when it comes to the Seder. We know for sure women are obligated in the Seder because of that association between Chametz and Matzah and other aspects, although there are details of the Seder that's a little arguable. But in general, that's what he discussed in that first Shuba, that women are obligated in those, in Shabbos and Seder meals. And other Yontif meals, so that's subject to a little bit of a machlokas.
Well, what is Yom Kippur?
Sorry?
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No problem. So that's essentially what we have here, potentially. And just we'll wrap up in a minute, but just to say two footnotes to that. So, first of all, practically speaking, as far as the question of somebody who's not planning on fasting on Yom Kippur, whether or not he has the chiyuv on Erev Yom Kippur, if he can manage it. So, this was a continuing discussion in Poskim. Rav Sifai Frank, for example, writes that in general we should be optimists in Niyodeya Amal Yolav Yom, that we don't know what's going to happen. Maybe a person will have a sudden refuah, and all of a sudden he will be able to fast on Yom Kippur, so it's kedai to operate on Erev Yom Kippur as if that's a possibility, and to try to fulfill the suda anyway. And just to go for a second to the question of the chiyuv of women, so there's a fascinating comment in the Torah Tanina, which addresses another Gemara, and addresses also an issue that Poskim talked about in a different context. So we mentioned that this pasuk in Emor that refers to fasting on the 9th of Tishrei. So the Gemara in two places has two different dinim that come from this pasuk. On the one hand, this din we've been talking about of eating on Erev Yom Kippur, and in addition, the din of Tosefes, which at a minimum, according to everyone, applies to Yom Kippur and applies at least to the fast of Yom Kippur. So starting the fast of Yom Kippur early, according to all Rishonim, that's a Chiyuv Daraisa of Tosefes. So the Poskim discusses the truth about this in the Machzor Avraham and in the Ksav Sofer and others. Theoretically, if you don't plan carefully, you could end up having these two dinim in conflict. that what happens if you get very busy on Erev Yom Kippur and you haven't had a chance to eat until right before the fast is supposed to start. So now you can't do both. You can't both add on to the fast, start the fast early, and as well fulfill this chiyuv of eating on Erev Yom Kippur, because you don't have time anymore to accommodate both. Either you're going to start the fast early and you're not going to eat at all, or you'll eat and you won't be able to start the fast early. So that was the machlokas achronim, which of these two dinim is more important. The conflict between these two dinim both come from the same pasuk, if they can't coexist, so which one should take priority? That was a machlokas in the Rishonim. But there's a fascinating comment in the Torah Tamima, that the Torah Tamima discusses the Gemara in Beitza, that discusses applications of the concept of mutav shiushogigin value mezidin. That there are times when we say that if somebody doesn't know the halacha, so maybe it's better not to tell them the halacha because they're not going to keep it anyway. And if you tell them about the halacha, they're not going to keep, so then they'll become mezidin, and better off they should just be shogeg, they should be violating it unknowingly, rather than violating it knowingly. So the Gemara has what seems to be a kind of random and perhaps somewhat offensive example. The Gemara applies it to women regarding Tosafes Yom Kippurim, that if they're eating close to the beginning of Yom Kippur, and you think, should you stop because of Tosefes? And then the Gemara says, no, don't try to have them stop early because Mutav Shushogin Value Muzit. So the Torah Tzmima discusses that. He says, where does this come from? Why are we suspicious, Davka, that the women are not going to be able to follow this halacha, that if you tell them that you're supposed to start the fast early, then they're going to find it too difficult, they're going to refuse, they're not going to follow, and they're going to become Mizidim instead of Shogin. Why would you have such an assumption? So he writes there that it must be there's something else going on. And he says, this must be a proof that women are obligated in the mitzvah of eating on Erev Yom Kippur. And that's what's behind this, that even though it would seem like it's a mitzvah sasei hazman grama, but women are obligated anyway, and women have such chavivas for the mitzvah that it's so unusual that they have a mitzvah sasei hazman grama that they're obligated in, that they're going to approach this one with great devotion, and therefore it's hard to take away from it. It's hard to say, no, stop early and add to the fast, because it's coming at the expense of this rare mitzvah opportunity. So he suggests that's how you can understand this Gemara, and it's an indication that indeed there is a chiyuv for women. It's a very fascinating interpretation. But we'll just add with one last thought, which hopefully should be relevant to us as we continue approaching towards Yom Kippur itself, that the whole idea of kol ochel v'shosa v'tisha ma'alav akasav kiil hisana tisha v'asiri, so as we mentioned, it's a hard idea to understand, and what exactly is the goal there? Why do we think that there's some value in fasting for both days? So there are some who suggest that when we talk about eating as a preparation for the fast, what we want to highlight here is that Yom Kippur is not about being miserable. That the idea is not that the Torah wants you to be starving and hangry on Yom Kippur itself, but that the notion of Inui here, it means we're angelic. It means that we are separate from all earthly desires, but not because that makes us all cranky and miserable. So to highlight that point, we have this mitzvah, which is Davka. And it gets to the whole question we've talked about a little bit in the context of Prisbo and things like that. Are we ever getting around the Torah's intent by taking certain approaches? So are we somehow defeating the goal if we eat so much on Erev and Kippur that we're not hungry on Yom Kippur itself? So here the suggestion is, Adarabba, we want you not to be hungry on Yom Kippur. We don't want you to eat on Yom Kippur, God forbid, but we want you not to be hungry. So if you eat before Yom Kippur so that you won't be hungry on Yom Kippur, so that's wonderful, because then that highlights that Yom Kippur is not about being unhappy and being miserable, but rather it's about being angelic. Parenthetically, this could relate to a question some of the Achronim talk about. Some Rosh Moshe Sternbach has an essay about this in the Moed Musman and others. Should we say there's a parallel mitzvah to eat on Erev Tisha B'Av? So there are those who suggest that maybe because of logic like this, there's a difference between Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, that Tisha B'Av is a sad day. So we're not looking to make it any easier. But Yom Kippur is not a sad day. Yom Kippur fasting is about something else. So therefore, if you are satisfied from before Yom Kippur, then that's fine. And in fact, that's not only not a problem, but maybe that's good, because that comes to highlight what the fast of Yom Kippur actually is about. So the notion that you're credited with both days is because on each day you're doing what you're supposed to do. So when you're supposed to be fasting, okay, so then on the 10th you'll fast. But on the 9th you're not supposed to be fasting, you're supposed to be eating. So it shows that each day you are doing what the Torah has in mind for you in order to create the specific experience it's looking for, and that you are acting within the Torah commands both days. So therefore, the same schar, so to speak, that you get for fasting and Yom Kippur, on some level, there's an equation that the accomplishment is the same on both days. That just whatever it is you're getting for fasting on Yom Kippur, you're getting for eating on Erev Yom Kippur, which is quite a fascinating idea. Certainly the mitzvah of the 9th is much easier as far as would seem to us than the mitzvah of the 10th, but that's a part of the chesed of the Ribbono Shel Olam here, and a part of the whole message of how we approach Yom Kippur. So this question of the mood, this also contributes to the idea of preserving the balance of Simcha for Yom Kippur. We spoke a little bit about the Simcha for Rosh Hashanah and how that is different than the Regalim. It requires somewhat of a careful balance. So here also, maybe Yom Kippur requires an even more careful balance, but recognizing that there is an attitude of Simcha and an attitude of optimism that's supposed to come towards Yom Kippur, but it can't manifest itself in eating on Yom Kippur. But there is a approach that we can take with how we balance the 9th and the 10th together, and how we take that whole package and what atmosphere that creates for us, that should help us approach Yom Kippur with a mindset that will indeed be conducive to being angelic and coming closer to God and finding the kapara that we are promised if we pursue with proper devotion. So that's something to think about as we get closer to the day itself. And tomorrow we'll talk a little bit more about Maseches Kit, but just as we approach Yom Kippur, here's a few thoughts to keep us focused. So I wish you all a wonderful day. God willing, again tomorrow in person and Zoom.